Well, while the Democratic Party sifts for a candidate to take on Donald Trump, there's been an explosive claim made against the president. It came from across the Atlantic in Westminster Magistrates Court in London, where the extradition case against WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange is being heard. The claim from Julian Assange's barrister that Donald Trump, through former US Congressman Dana Rohrabacher, offered to pardon Assange if he denied Russian involvement in Democratic Party email leaks before the 2016 US presidential election. Well, Rick Wilson is a former Republican Party strategist who has become one of the most vociferous campaigners against Donald Trump, going so far as to form his own political action committee ahead of the November presidential poll. I asked him about the Assange pardon claims.
Well, look, they were willing to say so in open court where they are liable for perjury if they're lying about it. And I think that it absolutely fits with the pattern we've seen of many, many other things that have gone on in the Trump era and the Trump administration, where shady characters make offers to other shady characters to do shady things for Donald Trump's benefit. And because of that, it doesn't surprise me in the least that Assange would have been offered something from especially from Dana Rohrabacher, who is very good with the Russians. He's in very good standing with them. As you may recall, then House Minority Leader Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy once said he thought two people got paid by Putin, Donald Trump and Dana Rohrabacher.
But the Trump administration has very quickly come out and said that this is manufactured. There's nothing true about this. We've also got a president who has been acquitted on impeachment charges. The American people aren't necessarily going to see it as you see it, are they?
Well, as you know, this is a president who even his fans admit has a, shall we say, tangential relationship to the truth. He is not a man known for telling the truth. His administration is also not known for telling the truth. And I think that people are going to process this as they would with most things with Donald Trump and you know that he is probably lying about the Assange thing. And look, Rohrabacher's travel records will prove it. And frankly, Rohrabacher's already said a few things on the record that seem to affirm what the court said today.
But do you think this and all of the other stuff that's swirling around, particularly post the impeachment process, is going to make any difference to whether Trump gets reelected later this year?
Look, the biggest factor in Trump being reelected is what the Democrats do in the next few weeks. And you know, Donald Trump's image and his behavior is, as we say, baked in the cake. There's a president who is, you know, abusing his office, and Americans know it. Some people like that. Most people don't. But the real difference here is if the Democrats decide whether or not they're going to be able to make a case that they have somebody who's a referendum against Donald Trump and a response to Trumpism that Americans buy. That Americans accept, and because of that, it's going to be a very difficult time if they nominate a Bernie Sanders, who is like Jeremy Corbyn, only so much more of a loser electorally for the Democratic Party. It's going to be a very painful experience if they put up a guy who, you know, and American politics being what it is, and having been in it for 30 years. If I was still doing what I used to do for the Republicans, helping Donald Trump against the Bernie Sanders, I would be popping corks already because Bernie Sanders is easy meat.
Why is that? Why is Bernie Sanders easy meat? He's proving to be very, you know, sustaining his popularity through these early stages of the Democratic process.
In a set of primaries and caucuses that attract the most liberal edge of the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. And even for Democrats, there's a lot of talking behind the scenes. They understand something. This election is not going to be won or lost in New York or California or Washington State or Oregon. It's going to be won or lost in Michigan and Ohio and Pennsylvania and Arizona and Florida and North Carolina. And those states have a lot of Democrats who voted for Donald Trump in 2016. They tend to be more male. They tend to be more blue collar. But in all of those states where the Democrats lost support that went to Trump, the people that jumped were not liberals. They were not progressives. They were moderate Democrats. And Ohio is famously, you know, home to a lot of the old Reagan Democrats, Democrats who are pro-life and pro-gun, but labor union members and functionally Democratic, except for a few big cultural things. And if it's Bernie Sanders, I think they're going to have an enormous amount of difficulty winning those people back.
Okay, who is it that's got to confront Trump then of the field that we see?
You know, I keep saying that I don't want to pick the Democratic nominee, and I really don't. There's no one who's perfect in this. There's no superstar like a Barack Obama or a Bill Clinton or a John F. Kennedy. There are some folks who I think could surprise and come up quickly. And, you know, Mike Bloomberg is the big X factor in all of this. But I honestly think, you know, and Amy Klobuchar, if she emerges somehow from this primary, it's a long shot. I think she could be very impressive against Donald Trump. I think that there are a lot of options. You know, maybe Joe Biden overperforms in some of these states. Maybe Joe Biden is the comeback kid, as they say in American politics. It's going to be a very hard race for any of them. They can't make a lot of mistakes. I literally wrote a book about how not to make the mistakes that I know they'll make.
And not a Pete Buttigieg? Is America not ready for a gay man in the White House?
You know, I think they're okay with gay Americans. I think they're okay with gay politicians. The difficulty for Pete is that African American voters just don't like the guy. And unless you can turn up and turn on African American voters in this election, you're done for. You know, Hillary Clinton lost 5 points of African-American turnout off Barack Obama. If that 5 points had turned out, she would have won the race with approximately 370 electoral votes and would have crushed Donald Trump in the states that he won. So, you know, without that, you got nothing as a Democratic candidate. And Pete just does not inspire them. And that may be because he's gay. It may be because he's young. It may be because he comes across sort of as a technocratic, nerdy kind of figure.
And so let's talk a bit about the party that you were once a strategist for. What is the fate of the Republicans? Because there will be a post-Trump period at some point. Does everything just go back to normal after that?
No. The Republican Party as we knew it is dead. The Republican Party that existed in the 30 years that I worked for people like George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush and a whole bunch of U.S. senators and guys like Rudy Giuliani and Mitt Romney and all these other people, that party is dead. It is completely gone, and no one is going to be able to put the paddles on its chest and revive it. Donald Trump has eaten it from the inside out. It doesn't believe in any of the things it once claimed to believe in. Fiscal discipline, we're running record debt, you know, strong foreign policy. The world, you know, looks at us now and that we've abandoned our alliances and we've embraced our enemies. You know, all the things that defined a conservative Republican back until Donald Trump came on the scene have been blown away by basically a cult of personality that is anti-media, is their primary characteristic. They are enormously aggrieved and feel like they've lost some a cultural war of some kind. And that party is not a viable party to win nationally in the future.
So what replaces it then? I mean, the party's not going to just disappear. It will continue to...
Well, no, the Republican Party will stagger along and it will lose in everywhere that's not a deep red state or a deep red district. But eventually, I think we will see the emergence of two new political parties in the U.S. I do think there's a strong desire on the Democratic side of the equation for a party that is essentially a progressive party, a Bernie Sanders-ish party. And I think there's a strong desire on the right to look at a party that is a traditionally conservative party that is not about nationalism and populism as Donald Trump's Republican iteration of the Republican Party is, but rather about the more traditional things, you know, the classic Burkean conservatism.
You mentioned the media and the Trump administration's and the Trump Republicans' loathing of the media. How well, though, do you think the media has done handling Trump, trying to bring him to account?
Well, they've done a lot better than they did in the 2016 election. The 2016 election was this, you know, Trump is such a sui generis character. He's such an absolute, you know, freak of nature, politically speaking, that they didn't really understand how to talk about him, how to handle him, how to interview him, when and when not to put him on television. And because of that, it was a very difficult moment for them. And I think that they have a lot of regrets about the way they handled 2016. You know, I know that a lot of the networks that took Donald Trump when he called from his bedroom at 6 o'clock in the morning, you know, now look at that as giving him a lot of free advertising he didn't deserve. And so you know, I think that they've done better. We are actually in a kind of a golden age in America of investigative journalism. I mean, there have been some scoops out of this era of Donald Trump that have absolutely been astounding reporting, fantastic depth of reporting about the scandals and the corruption in this administration. It's been a very welcome kind of lift for a lot of the big papers. You know, the Washington Post and the New York Times have done an amazing amount of research and reporting that Donald Trump is very unhappy with, and that the GOP is very unhappy with. I mean, the Texas Tribune, an independent outlet down in Texas, obviously, has done work on the immigration crisis that blows everyone else out of the water. And so we look at all these things in terms of the media, you know, how they've handled Trump. They have a lot of regrets about the front end, but they're making up for it on the back end.
And just one last question, although it's a very big one. What about the other checks and balances that are meant to protect the US system from rogue presidential behavior? Have they worked? Have they failed? Do they need to be overhauled?
No, they've completely failed. They've completely failed. And it's completely failed. And it frankly should terrify anyone who pays attention to American politics that the president has a pet attorney general who has told him, and successfully, unfortunately, that he can do no wrong, that executive power is unlimited, that the president cannot be held to account in either Congress or the courts for any action that he performs. And that is something the founders most certainly did not envision and most certainly would have been horrified by if they knew about it. And I think that we are at the precipice of a number of collapses of institutional aspects of American government that make me extraordinarily nervous about the future, because, you know, and it's not just Donald Trump. The person who comes after him, you know, anytime somebody develops a weapon, it's hard for the other side to put it down once they take control of it.
Rick Wilson, good to talk to you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
Rick Wilson, former Republican strategist. His new book is Running Against the Devil.